Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. And now, open for dinner, Monday through Thursday, 4 to 8. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. This is Taking Aim, and I am Steve Woodward. Thanks for joining us yet again. Hey, coming up, we're going to have a conversation with a very talented young lady who lives here in our community, and she's going to tell us all about an upcoming Broadway concert benefit show here in Pinehurst in June 5th. We will be joined by Constance Cairo Conway, who is a accomplished vocalist, and she's going to bring us up to date on what they're planning for the June 5th Broadway concert to benefit the Moore County Republican Women's Club, which is a one of the most successful and largest Republican women's clubs in the country, and that is not an exaggeration. We will begin, as we always do, by acknowledging our fabulous sponsor, the Marketplace Restaurant and Catering. Since 1980, your go-to for fabulous breakfast and lunch menu options, as well as a full range of catering services, which can address small, intimate office gatherings or the wedding of the century. And don't forget, Monday through Thursday, dinner is now served at the Marketplace between 4 and 8 p.m. And especially keep an eye on Tuesdays, when tacos will be the dominant menu item at the Marketplace. Since 1980, your go-to for restaurant and catering, and the great people there also will keep you coming back. Wonderful operation. Well, folks, we begin the show, as we always do, by wading into the snake pit of American culture and identifying our public enemy number one, numero uno. And this is a familiar theme and a familiar name or names, but we have to. We have to stay on top of this particular chapter of American history. Our public enemy number one this week is the intelligence community and the notorious Dr. Anthony Fauci and all of his underlings at the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, who, of course, back in 2020, helped sort of derail everyone's lives with the COVID-19 virus, which spawned a global pandemic, the likes of which we haven't experienced before. But the reason this is now back on the radar is due to the testimony of a whistleblower, CIA, former CIA director of national intelligence staffer, who has a very good memory of what he went through in 2020 during the outbreak of the pandemic. His name is James Erdman. He was called before a Senate subcommittee hearing on the origins of COVID-19. And the cover-up of those origins that ensued. And he leaves no doubt, if there ever was any, that nefarious ambition was at the front and center of what we were enduring in 2020. Let's play clip one.
Public health policy would have been very different had the American public been made aware that a virus from a lab in China was going to serve as the foundation for an emergency use authorization mRNA products being mandated by the former administration. Dr. Fauci's role in the cover-up was intentional. Dr. Fauci influenced the analytical process and findings by leveraging his position to ensure the IC consulted with a conflicted list of curated subject matter experts, public health officials, and scientists. Still others participated in planning Event 201 in 2019. This was a coronavirus pandemic tabletop exercise, mostly similar to the events that played out during the COVID-19 pandemic. And it was attended by Dr. Fauci and individuals with IC ties like former DNI Avril Haines. The CIA and DNI analytic managers responsible for examining the origin of COVID made decisions inconsistent with the conclusions of subject matter experts and analytical tradecraft, consistently favoring the theory of zoonosis or natural origin. Following the CIA's COVID relook that culminated in 2023, the CIA retaliated against analysts supporting the lab leak hypothesis.
Did they ever? And I hope you picked up the most important thing he said there during that minute and a half clip that we shared with you, which was basically that in 2019, a rehearsal was conducted, basically going over how to carry out the release of a lab-created virus and then all of the steps that would be taken thereafter to create a public health crisis and impose all of the mandated lockdowns and, of course, roll out the vaccine, which would enrich the pharmaceutical companies as well as Fauci and his hench people. And, of course, we can only hope that this testimony and the outcome, the aftermath of this hearing on Capitol Hill will be another step toward full accountability for the people who imposed this on us 6 years ago and 5-6 years ago. And again, Fauci was pardoned by Biden on Biden's way out the door as he limped into oblivion with his walker and his drool cup. But let us not forget that Fauci is still susceptible to charges and lawsuits within the individual states, and that is still on the table. And we can only hope that there's vigilance in that area. Of course, we always seem to find a runner-up for public enemy number one, and this one goes hand in glove with what we just talked about. After recent revelations that further confirm the role of a University of North Carolina scientist, Ralph Baric, Ph.D., who spent his career as a public health researcher. But one of the things he was working on in his lab, while nobody was paying attention, was the notion of gain-of-function research, whereby you literally create in the laboratory a COVID-type virus, ostensibly so that you can understand how to keep it from spreading, and what measures would be taken in the unlikely event that it ever got loose. Well, guess what? The event occurred. And Ralph Baric, working with the Wuhan laboratory in China, was complicit in that. So guess what happens? Wouldn't you know it, a few days ago, Dr. Baric announces that he's retiring. Can you believe it? He's retiring. And And of course, the University of North Carolina rushed to praise him and describe his legacy as the for his pioneering life-saving treatments and important diagnostic advancements in vaccines. However, he got a little out over his skis when it came to COVID-19, and Barrick has said in his congressional testimony that he did not believe that COVID originated in a lab, but has acknowledged that it was possible. And of course, you know, since that time when he gave that very weak testimony, all evidence now points to a deliberate lab origin, and all of the nefarious and tyrannical activities that followed that. So, a grim time. Let's hope we never have to go through that again. We transition now, as we always do, to our public embarrassment number one. And once again, a lot of candidates for that. Just go up and down the roster of Democrats in the General Assembly in Raleigh or up on Capitol Hill in Washington, and you'll find all kinds of embarrassing people to choose from. You know, Hakeem Jeffries, the minority leader in the House, talking about the necessity for full-out warfare against the conservative movement, the MAGA movement, everywhere, all the time. And then acting surprised when unhinged Democrat wing nuts go out and try to, and not only try, but commit acts of violence against innocent people. What a shock, Hakeem. But our public embarrassment number one this week are all the Democrats in North Carolina who turned the other cheek while for years... Medicaid was falling prey to rampant fraud, as we now know it has fallen prey across the country. But we're talking about the findings of State Auditor Dave Bollock, who is a Republican. His office has determined that there was a 47,000%, I'm going to say that again, 47,000% increase. That's almost like, you know, a trillion. You can't really comprehend the scope of that. A 47,000% explosion in autism therapy billings in North Carolina. The system that was billed for autism treatment through Medicaid went from 1.4 million in total billings to more than 660 million a year within a 5-year range, which of course was, you know, a screaming red flag for the auditor to take a look at that. But before Dave Bollock came along, all the fat and happy Democrats running the state of North Carolina, Governor Roy Cooper, who is now thinks he's running for U.S. Senate, Attorney General Josh Stein, who is now the governor, God help us, and the previous auditor, April Wood, who was best known for her inability to drive a vehicle in a straight line. Before Bollock came along, these people were like, la-di-da, you know, it does seem like we're getting a lot of more volume of billing for autism treatment through Medicaid, but oh, I guess it's just, you know, it's just a statistical anomaly that we can conveniently ignore. But Bollock is, as you might imagine, quite adamant in how scandalous this is. Play clip two.
Autism therapy services, for example, those are vital services to folks that and individuals that need that therapy. But when you have, like in North Carolina, a system that went from $1.4 million or so in total billings for autism therapy to more than $660 million a year in billings on autism therapy within a five-year range. That begs an audit from the state auditor, who in North Carolina, we are the top watchdog agency for taxpayer waste, fraud, and abuse prevention. So we've dug down into that and are in the middle of that. So we're hand in glove with the vice president with respect to focusing on this waste, fraud, and abuse to make sure that the people who need the services and deserve those services get the services, and that we're not wasting money, because every wasted dollar is a dollar that can't be spent on a person who actually needs service.
Yeah, and that's the real scandal. I mean, put aside the waste of taxpayer dollars. And by the way, when you hear about $660 million, that's not just some, that's not just some amount of money floating out there that comes from, some mysterious source. That comes from your bank accounts when you pay your taxes. So, every time a story like this comes along about rampant fraud and abuse, pay attention to it, and we should applaud those who continue to stay on the case, whether it's independent journalists like Nick Shirley in Minnesota, or James O'Keefe in California, or elected officials like Dave Bullock, the state auditor. We should give our we owe them a debt of gratitude for going into the fray on this kind of abusiveness. And I think it's just going to, keep coming up. It's been going on for so many years in places that, where Democrats were large and in charge. And it's all coming home to roost right before our very eyes. So another topic that is unfolding right before our very eyes, of course, is the ongoing military engagement by the United States and Israel in Iran. And of course, earlier this week, President Trump visited Xi Jinping in China for a greatly heralded state visit. And, I have no problem with that. I don't know that the timing of this visit to China is particularly good with this conflict in Iran going on, and given the fact that it has the consequence of impacting the United States economy, which, some are saying is a terrible travesty, and we should just, walk away from Iran like tomorrow in order to bring this to a conclusion. But I think that would be, a mistake, given the stakes and given what Iran is capable of if we allow them to remain unchecked in terms of their nuclear ambitions. So in other words, what I'm saying is, a few months of high gasoline prices today is a small investment in the future of our children and grandchildren being able to live in a world that is not threatened by the demonic forces in Iran and their nuclear weapons production goals. A former CIA director who I follow quite closely and who appears on frequently on Steve Bannon's War Room program has written a piece that I think hits on the head what needs to happen. He says it's time to stop talking to Iran, and it's time to quote unquote go for the jugular. And he's right about that, because the Iranians are still moving oil across their border into Iraq, never mind the Persian Gulf and the Strait of Hormuz. And he says that his sources say they're mixing it with Iraq oil and still getting it to the market. So in other words, they're still generating revenue from oil production. And the only way that we can make that stop is to obliterate their ability to do that. Every time the United States proposes a way to reach an agreement and end the hostilities and the conflict, as Faddis writes, they basically tell us to drop dead. He says there are roughly two dozen tankers anchored in an offshore area near Malaysia right now that are carrying Iranian oil. And the United States needs to go in and seize all of those tankers and sail them to a port of our choosing under our control and then sell the oil. Don't let Iran make money off the oil. And also keep it from going to China, which desperately needs it. And as long as China is getting the oil from Iran, it's going to aid and abet what the Iranians are doing. Faddis says we need to target every overland route from Pakistan into Iran and eliminate bridges where necessary. And the roadways themselves make it impossible for the Iranians to move oil out and for the Chinese to continue to send war materials to Tehran. Do the same with every railroad line. In other words, close the country. Stop the flow of oil out and stop the flow of Chinese components and chemical precursors in. Impose a no-fly zone over the entire nation. Flights are still taking off and landing all day long from the Tehran airport in a time of war. It's ridiculous. So the point here is, if you're frustrated by this conflict going on into its March, April, May, third month, as many of us are, we should be talking not about how can we get out of it and restore our economy. We should be talking about how we can end it with victory and a unconditional surrender by the Iranian overlords, who are the essence of evil in the world. And it's not just the nuclear weapons that pose the threat. Of course, it's their using the oil wealth to underwrite at every opportunity terrorism. Hamas in the Middle East comes to mind immediately. So again, thanks to Sam Faddis for driving home the point that I think all of us agree with wholeheartedly. Now, let's turn to this disturbing story out of the Pacific Northwest. Of course, we're familiar with Turning Point USA, the campus conservative organization created by the late Charlie Kirk and his organization. And of course, there are chapters of Turning Point USA across college campuses from sea to shining sea, thanks to the tenaciousness of Charlie and his team. And they're, you know, they're not just at the conservative schools, which was, low hanging fruit, but they've been established everywhere at many of these woke universities, such as the University of Washington in Seattle, which, of course, as we know, Seattle is a cesspool of the woke left. They have a mayor there who is worse than Zoran Mamdani when it comes to socialist Marxist ambitions. But at the University of Washington, there was an event scheduled in which a young woman named Chloe Cole would be speaking specifically to call out, to illuminate the awful trend toward the pushing of transgenderism among our youth. And she speaks about that from a position of experience. She was convinced to move into a transgender state when she was just 15 years old. She underwent hormone therapy and a double mastectomy. Between the ages of 12 and 16, she endured this awful mutilation of her body. But like many, she got a little older and decided that, you know, this was a mistake and I'm going to push back against it. She is described as a detransitioner, and she has made it her mission to travel and talk about how anyone who is having buyer's remorse about transgenderism, how they can pursue a path toward becoming a detransitioner. So she was all set to speak at the University of Washington, but the a couple of the radical campus groups there caught wind of her event. Students for a Democratic Society and the University of Washington Divestment Campaign, they circulated materials and flyers accusing Chloe Cole of being a transphobic grifter and urging students to gather at the site of the event and basically raise hell, make noise, disrupt, creating a very threatening environment. Ultimately, a decision had to be made, and Chloe Cole is going to tell us about that. Please play clip 4.
As many of you may know now, I was scheduled to speak tomorrow at an event at University of Washington hosted by TPUSA's local chapter there. I'm putting this video out because, as you may have heard, Antifa has assembled a local militia, in their own words, to shut down this event. Their actions, their explicit threats on my life, have raised this event to national attention. A level of attention our security team and the local PD are frankly unprepared for. Before Charlie Kirk's assassination, I think I would have been less careful, but the times have changed, and speaking on a university campus in 2026 can come with deadly consequences. We are postponing this event because of this reality. I am not afraid of Antifa. The reason I'm speaking out at all is because I've already walked and escaped my own personal hell. It's hard to shake me, and some ragtag group of wannabe revolutionaries on cross-sex hormones certainly won't shake me.
Well, I salute her her courage and her resolve, but just think about that. A major university campus, the University of Washington, and, you know, I don't care if it's a blue state and it's Democrat-controlled, and I'm sure the university president is a lefty, and, you know, we accept all of that as being reality at a lot of these major universities, which are nothing but woke indoctrination chambers. But can't somebody have the decency as a university president or other, you know, a board of trustees to say, no matter how much we may disagree with some points of view, we have to allow them to be heard on this campus. It's part of the college experience. It's part of the ambition of higher learning, which is to share a variety of ideas and perspectives, but they can't do it anymore. They simply cannot do it. And instead they would seek to intimidate and threaten a young woman to the point where Turning Point USA had no choice but to cancel her appearance. And it's really a terrible time that we're living in. And you might be surprised to find out that the school where Charlie Kirk was assassinated, Utah Valley University, on September 10th, 2025, you'll recall what a enthusiastic and large audience he attracted that day for his speech. And you might have looked at that and thought, well, now there's a very conservative school full of bright, young, open-minded college kids and, who love their country and love God and were receptive to Charlie Kirk's message. But you would be wrong, because there's reporting now by an organization called the Cougar Chronicle that Utah Valley University has now several on-campus groups, including the Civil Disobedience Club, that was organized just within weeks after Charlie Kirk's assassination. So in other words, there were students on that campus who were emboldened by Kirk's graphic death in real time on live television, who saw an opening, you might say, to become more radical and begin to recruit fellow students who would engage in threatening behavior should any future speakers come to their school. That's what we're dealing with. It is it's really not a great time to be a college student unless you're completely insane. But if you're normal in any sense of the word, it's got to be challenging. And this is why, Charlie Kirk always used to say, hey, just don't waste your time going to college. You know, there's other things, other ways that you can learn and become a productive member of society without the high tuitions and the indoctrination. But in any case, it is a difficult time. But it's also not really any better at the high school level because, you know, the indoctrination and the anti-Americanism and the anti-Judeo-Christianityism is quite rampant there as well. We saw just in the past week a hearing on Capitol Hill, which was part of an examination of the insidious presence of Sharia law as it begins to creep into our culture. The subcommittee on the Constitution and limited government held a hearing entitled Sharia Free America, Why Political Islam and Sharia Law Are Incompatible with the U.S. Constitution. Now, and one of the young people called to testify was a high school student from Wiley, Texas, who tried a couple of years ago to form something as basic as a Republican student club as a 16-year-old sophomore. And in his testimony before Congress, he described the many hoops through which he was forced to jump just to get this club approved. And then even after the high school in Wiley, Texas approved it, they kept moving the goalposts. And in his testimony, he said that the existence of the club was defying a district-wide policy against political clubs. And then even after they decided to let them go forward, principals were caught taking down approved posters they thought no one was looking. And this kid was having none of it. And then fast forward to this year, he's walking through his high school one fine day and walking to the cafeteria for lunch with some of his friends. And he testified that he saw a large booth labeled Islam. Four adult women were representing the organization. And they had another sign that asked the question, why Islam? And young Marco Hunter Lopez decided to walk over to the table and find out what they were doing. And he engaged in a discussion with the women, one in particular, he testified, who they kept referring me to because she knew most of the theological questions. I looked over and saw multiple pamphlets spread out, one of which was explicitly titled Understanding Sharia. This was very concerning to me and other students. They were also making Qurans available in the high school in Wiley, Texas. And of course, he pushed back against this and called for the high school to eliminate the club, and of course ran into a buzzsaw of opposition. And he simply went to Washington to urge the committee and lawmakers across the country to demand full investigation into these Sharia organizations, reject any ideology or political system that is at odds with American law, and urged parents and students to stand up, demand transparency and protection from ideological capture. He said, "What began as my effort to start a simple conservative club has revealed how quickly institutions can be compromised when we remain silent." And man, is he absolutely 100% correct about that. So this kid is seated in a congressional hearing. He's like 18 years old, suit and tie. You can't believe how composed he is. And he runs into the despicable little Democrat from Maryland, the Congressman Jamie Raskin, who, of course, is salivating at the opportunity to demonize this kid for daring to push back against Islam and Sharia in his high school. Let's play clip three.
So your position is that America is a theocracy?
You didn't let me finish my original statement, and I understand you have limited time, but what I was going to say is I'm not suggesting we need to go back to anything that's in writing, but what I am saying is we need to acknowledge...
Well, I think we should go back to something in writing. I think we should go back to the First Amendment.
Oh, yes, the Constitution,
yes.
Obviously, but what I'm saying is that, you know, how I said original colonies were requiring declaration of faith to run for office. I'm not saying we have.
That's why we have a First Amendment.
But what I'm saying is that we do...
That's precisely why Jefferson wrote it.
We do need to acknowledge our Christian heritage in America. That's what I'm trying
to get. You can acknowledge whatever heritage you want, but you can't impose an establishment of religion on other people. That's the greatness.
I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just saying we need to acknowledge our heritage. That's what I'm saying.
Well, everybody can acknowledge their own heritage. Do you agree with that?
American heritage, not just any heritage, is what I'm saying.
Oh, you don't think that you're allowed to acknowledge your Christian heritage or your Jewish heritage or your Muslim heritage?
I'm saying you members of Congress need to acknowledge American heritage.
Okay. American Heritage 1, Jamie Raskin 0. I can't imagine. I don't care how virulent you are as a lefty, being that disrespectful to a young man who is merely. And remember the context now. We just gave you the context of this back and forth, which was the kid tried to start a Republican student club in his high school. He was basically disrupted at every turn in trying to do that by adults running the high school. And yet, he's got to stand there and listen to Jamie Raskin lecture him about American history and how the First Amendment protects radical Islam from entering our high schools. Well, you know, you could argue that you can have a discussion about the history of Islam and the tenets of the Islamic faith, but when it comes to the imposition of a whole different type of rule of law beyond that which is defined in our Constitution, and trying to convince high school kids that that's kind of a fluid situation. Well, you know, American law, Sharia law, what's the difference? Well, there's a big difference, and it takes an 18-year-old to drive home that point in the halls of Congress in the face of despicable, disrespectful behavior by an awful person named Jamie Raskin. And remember, I don't entirely blame these politicians who are vile and repulsive. I blame the fact that people keep voting for guys like Jamie Raskin in Maryland and other blue states. That's the real problem. But we have solutions, folks. We sure do. And that is, we gather with our like-minded conservative Republicans at every opportunity to push back. And one organization that does that very well is the Moore Republican Women right here in Moore County. And they will be delivering a beautiful Broadway concert coming up on June 5th. And now here to tell us about it is Moore County's Constance Cairo Conway, who is directing the upcoming Broadway concert that will benefit the Moore County Republican women. Good morning, Connie.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in. Connie is a former Southern Californian.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of us here in Moore County are former something.
Yes, exactly.
Refugees from other places. And we are very happy to have you come in and tell us about this concert that's coming up on June 5th at the Pinehurst Village Assembly Hall, a fundraiser for the Moore County Republican Women and all of the work that they do to support the Moore County Republican Party and other causes in the community. Tell us a little bit about your background. I've heard you perform, so I know how talented you are as a vocalist, but tell us about your background and what you've done throughout your life in the realm of performing.
Well, I started singing when I was 12 years old, and so I auditioned for the Monmouth Conservatory of Music. My parents arranged that, and I had private lessons all through school with the director of that conservatory. From there, I just did all the musicals at the high school and community theater in the summer, and I loved it so much. But a year out of high school, I decided to move back to California because that was in New Jersey. I decided to move back to California with my parents and try and do a theater career out there. So I think that's probably my biggest regret in life, not staying on the East Coast to go to New York, because I did have some training in New York. But anyway, I found a great teacher in California, and it wasn't that long that I was spotted out by an agent in a Christmas show and was able to get into professional theater through her. I was seen in Sweeney Todd at the Kennedy Center, and that was a real big deal. I was Joanna, and that kind of put me on the map. And there was some, you know, talk, because back then the world is very small and who you know and how you get around in your exposure. And once I got my agent, I got into the Lawrence Welk Theater. I got my Actors Equity card, which you can't do professional theater without that. And once you get a leading role, you get it instantly. And so I got the lead in Pirates of Penzance at the Lawrence Welk Theater, and Polly and the Boyfriend, and Merry Widow with Edie Adams. And one of my favorite shows and best experiences was doing Showboat with Donald O'Connor. I played his daughter, and that was a thrill of a lifetime.
He's an icon. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It must have been quite an experience.
It was amazing. And that whole cast was amazing. His dressing room was next to mine, and across from mine was Richard White. He's the voice of Gaston in Beauty and the Beast on the Disney cartoon version. And it was just a thrill. And I had Catherine McPhee's mother playing Julie, and that's Pisha McPhee. And it was just fabulous. And then I went on to have children, and did a lot of concert work throughout Palm Springs, Palm Desert, Santa Barbara, Long Beach. I did a private dinner concert for General Norman Schwarzkopf, which was wonderful. He loved sopranos, and he sat at the dinner table with his business people around the time his book was released. And every time I opened up to sing an aria or musical theater piece, he would turn and look at me and watch me. And he made sure at the end that I came down and met him and shook his hand. And I said, gosh, I wish you ran for president. So he's a lovely, lovely person.
Yeah, he and, was quite a
So
kid.
It was really neat. I had some really nice opportunities performing with lovely, lovely people. Love it.
And so here we are. Now you're a Moore County resident, and mm-hmm. I know you're involved with the Moore County Republican Women, heavily involved, and we thank you for your work there. Tell us about the genesis of this concert that's coming up on June 5th in Pinehurst. It is a Broadway concert.
Right, right, which is, you know, my favorite. I was operatically trained, but I learned to do Broadway musicals because I enjoy the acting. And there's a big difference. We just don't stand there and sing. We sing with from our soul. And that is my favorite. And so I had like 35 students a week in California that I taught private voice with. And I decided to retire a lot more with my husband here in Pinehurst. And so I have three students that really needed to have some exposure to give them the opportunity, but what a way to give back to the community. What can I do using my talent, my God-given talent, and some of these kids' God-given talents to benefit the community? And so I offered this to our president, Pilar, and she took me up on it.
Pilar Page.
Yes, mm-hmm. And I did this type of community service in California, different organizations, charity organizations, and we would put together a charity show to benefit whatever that cause is.
And then a part of this production will be on the keyboard will be Ed Martell.
Oh, my gosh,
now,
yes.
I've seen Ed perform several times, and in fact, my wife and I attend the Village Chapel, as I believe you do, and your husband. And every now and then, Ed will just show up on a Sunday morning, and what a treat that is.
Well, I got to see Ed in a concert that he did over at the Sunrise Theater. And since I did Sound of Music, I was Mother Abbess in the Sound of Music at Sunrise a couple of years ago. I asked the director, who is he? Well, you know, I need to know him because I've been looking for a professional accompanist. And so she gave me his name and number. And the crazy thing is that once we started talking and talking about, because he's from L.A.,
yeah.
We have all these mutual friends. And then he says, you're having Cheryl Crandall Hernandez sing in this concert? I go, yes, why? He goes, I worked with her 30 years ago in industrial shows. So he was just thrilled to be able to work with us and continue doing, working some professional things with singers here. So I was so happy. And he's amazing.
He is as talented a pianist as I've ever heard.
Yes. I mean,
just remarkable.
Yes.
And you mentioned Cheryl Crandall Hernandez, who is a Broadway performer.
She did Broadway. She toured with Perry Como. She graduated from UCLA, and there's a very prestige award that is given to the musical theater student every year. And it's the Carol Burnett Reward and the Frank Sinatra Award. And lucky her, she got to get a kiss on Frank Sinatra on her cheek.
Wow.
And then she actually has met Carol Burnett, of course. And so she went on to Broadway right after that to understudy Debbie Boone in Seven Brides for Seven Brothers. And then she did the national tour for that show. And she did Cruise Line. She had shows created just for her talent. And she actually will be singing two songs that were arranged just for her for those cruise ship shows. So that's going to be a real treat, too. And Ed can certainly play the heck out of it. It's beautiful.
We are talking to Connie Conway about the upcoming Broadway performance benefiting the Moore County Republican Women on June 5th. Why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the other individuals who will be part of this production as well?
Yes. Well, my stepson, which is my husband's son, Colin Conway, he is a force to be reckoned with back in California. He did musical theater, and he was my voice student before he became my stepson. And our boys introduced my husband and I together. So they were both in honor choir in high school. So he got the leads in high school, and he went on to vocal competitions and turned everybody's head. He came in second place, but the first place was a girl, so I think he won in the male category. And he's going to be singing that song, Once Upon a Time. And it is gorgeous, and they'll hear what he did in that vocal competition. He was also up for Best Actor. It was a Macy Award in Orange County. And he out here, he is directing several children's productions. He has been at the Encore Theater doing Forever Plaid, and he was in Sherlock Holmes, and he played Sherlock Holmes. He was Captain Von Trapp when I did Sound of Music at the Sunrise, so we had two family members together finally. It was such an honor and a pleasure to be on stage. But we only had one scene together, and that was the end. So, Colin, I'm excited to have you here, Colin. He's done voiceover work. He's extremely talented. We also have Will Britt, who is the son of Laura Morgan, and he comes from a huge history of such a talented family. Her mother, Laura's mother, played piano and sang, and then taught her to play piano and sing. And so Will is just born with this incredible, rich, natural operatic voice. What I have done with him the past 3 years is have him get a new level of vocal control. So we had this one-on-one training, and you're going to hear Broadway-level performance out of this young man. I'm just excited because this is mainly his debut to really show off. He's sung here and there, but he has a full-time career in law enforcement, and he's got just a talent that will just drop your jaw. So I'm excited. The last one we have is little Jackie Shelton. She's 8 years old. She's been with me studying voice every week for 2 years. She was little Gretel in Sound of Music at the Sunrise Theater with me. And she is just a natural talent, bright, darling little girl. I don't usually take students this young, but she was so good and so well loved that I felt like I needed to help her parents nurture her and show her the way because she has a bright future ahead of her. So she comes weekly, and when she comes in and she learns her song. The following week, we review the song and it's memorized. So she is a little performer. She is also, she performed God Bless America and the National Anthem for More Republican Women for one of our luncheons. And next week, she'll be singing the National Anthem at Fort Bragg for a big ceremony, and the jets will be flying over her head after she's done with the song. And her daddy works there, so we're real excited for her.
That'll be a great experience for her, I'm sure. So can you give us a little preview? I mean, your favorite Broadway show tunes is part of the billing of this, but can you give us a little taste of what we might be in store for when we attend?
Yes. Well, we're going to open up, of course, with the National Anthem sung by Laura Morgan. And you're going to hear things from The Sound of Music, Finian's Rainbow, Paint Your Wagon, Annie, Showboat, and King and I, South Pacific, Phantom of the Opera. We have a song from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, a duet that Jackie and I do, and Babes in Arms, Love Never Dies, which is a sequel from Phantom of the Opera, Les Miserables. The whole cast, the whole crew will be singing five songs from Les Miserables, and we're going to have Laura be our guest performer. She's going to be doing Send in the Clowns because people need to know where Will Britt got that voice. Mm-hmm. And then we'll be doing Sweeney Todd, which is my good luck show, but I'm giving the singing up to the guys on that moment. And let's see, a song from Singing in the Rain, Wicked, and Man of La Mancha. And we always end with a good one like God Bless America.
Boy, that's going to be a great evening. And as a reminder, we're talking about the Broadway concert coming up on June 5th at 7 p.m., Pinehurst Assembly Hall. You can go to the More Republican Women's website, which is, listen carefully, mrwnc.org, mrwnc.org, and there you can click on a link to find out more about the concert and to secure your tickets. And I suggest you secure them soon because
yeah, we're selling.
Based on what you just described, I think this show will be a major sellout.
Yeah, so. It's very limited seating. There's only 185 seats, yeah. And we're about 120 right now. So we're getting down to the wire.
So, Connie, thank you for joining us. Before we go, just I have to ask you, what are among your favorite songs to sing?
You know, I have to say Make Believe from Showboat because it was such a great experience, and it's definitely one of my favorites. I had to say Over the Rainbow, but that's not in the show. Mm-hmm. That's always been a good luck song of mine. And there's another one by Michelle Legrand called On My Way to You, which I'll do probably another time.
Okay. Well, thank you again for joining us, Connie, and I'll ask the lyrical question as we go out. If happy little bluebirds can fly over the rainbow, then why can't I? Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.